My name is Glenn, and I am the youth pastor here at Lambert Park Church, and I get the privilege of sharing with you this morning. Scott is away. He's actually at a conference all week. He's going to be one of the he's kind of leading worship and supporting the journey of a group of leaders that are there through Arrow Leadership. And so he is away this week, but he'll be back next Sunday. And so that's what's going on with that. For those of you who are in middle school, you get to stay in today and hang out with me, which is awesome. Thank you for staying, which is great. So that's what's happening with the middle school students today. So if you want to hang out with and, you know, kind of you can kind of pick on some things in there. I've tried to kind of add some stuff in for the middle school kids. So you'll see if you can figure it out. I've heard from many, and I myself have been encouraged from the series that we've been in. It's called the Follow Me series, and I got to wrap it up today. I got to kind of seal it off, and I've been challenged in my own walk. I've been challenged with my followership. How am I doing with my followership? Am I seeking to know and serve God? Am I seeking to follow Him and be connected with Him? If you're just joining us today for the first time, Scott Anderson, who's the lead pastor I was talking about, he's been leading us through this foundational series. The basic kind of premise of this series is a disciple is someone who by grace and by choice is with Jesus to learn from Jesus, to live like Jesus. The concept is we never cease to be Jesus followers, to be His disciples, that we continue on in our lives all the way through, and that's what we're to do. We're to be His disciples, to follow Him. Whenever I look at the word disciple, though, I don't know if you do this. Sometimes it autocorrects on my phone or things like that, and it's like discipline, you know? Like, they're so close together. Like, you think disciple, discipline. They're like just like one letter. Yeah, they're so close together. I'm like, sometimes like, disciple, did I spell that right? You know, and you kind of like double check. It's like one of those spelling checks that you miss, you know, when you're going through things. And I was thinking of this story that I heard. There was a crowded American Airlines flight that was about to take off when this five-year-old, decides to throw a temper tantrum. Just freaks out. And no matter what the mom does, the kid just like flailing all over and screaming and stuff, kicking the seats with people in front of them, you know, like, and you're sitting there on the flight. And I can imagine people like, oh great, here we go. This is going to be one of those flights, you know, right? And no matter what the mom does to try to get this boy to calm down, there's no way. Suddenly from the rear of the plane, a retired Air Force general slowly walks up to the front of the aisle. General leans down and motions towards the boy's chest and his nanny whispers something into the boy's ear. Instantly, the boy calms down. He's got the, like, you know, smile face. Gently, he takes his mother's hand and quietly fastens the boy's seatbelt. All the other passengers burst into spontaneous applause. As the general slowly makes his way back to the seat, one of the cabin attendants says, excuse me, General, but can I ask you the magic words you used on the little boy? You know, probably getting some tips, right? The old general smiles and confides. I showed him my pilot's wings, service stars, military ribbons, and explained that they entitled me to throw one passenger out of the plane door on any flight I choose. Some jokes just kind of stick in your head, you know? Anyways, being a follower is always changing. And today we're talking about being a disciple of Christ. And the older I get, the more I understand about discipleship and being a disciple. And my life changes. It's interesting, you know, you think, I thought when I first became a Christian, I'm like, I got this pretty figured out, you know, and stuff. And the older I get, the less I think that I do. You know, we all have things that we need to be working on, that we are being discipled on, that we're learning to be better followers and to learn to follow Christ more, you know. And sometimes I make mistakes, and I have default places I go back to over and over again. I procrastinate, or I choose to do lots of busy good things instead of doing the things I know I should be doing, you know, the things that I know I need to tackle and take on. Which makes me wonder, for you, am I alone in this? Do you have default places that you go when you're, like, struggling with God, struggling with being a follower of Christ? Where is it that you go when you are struggling? When you make mistakes, what's your default to go to? Or maybe it's the other side of things. Maybe when things are going good, you're like, I got this covered, God, and you stop doing the things that you did when you were struggling. How is it that God takes you and brings you back on track? What kinds of things have to happen in your life to say, okay, I'm going to follow again? You know, when you go the wrong way, when you head off track, and all of us do at times, right? What is it that God has to do to bring you back? To bring you back around to what God wants for you, to be a follower again. Today I've entitled my message, Follow Again. What does God have to do to get you to follow again? To re-engage with being discipled by God. You know, we're not the first people to wonder about this. They're not the first people to kind of be like, oh man, I'm totally off track and I need somebody to pull me back. Today we're going to take a look at Peter and how he was derailed and Jesus pulled him back on track. He got him. He's like, okay, I want you to get back on track. I need you to follow me again. I need you to be on my team. I need you to do a lot of things for me. See, Peter was this passionate follower of Jesus Christ. He was like, he was the fireball guy. Jesus is about to get like taken to be crucified and there's like this huge army of people that have come to take Jesus and he pulls out a knife and starts trying to cut people, like cut somebody's ear off and stuff. Like there's 12 disciples and Jesus, you know, it's 13 and there's like this legion of like people coming in and he's like, Wolf, we're gonna fight, you know, and stuff. That's who Peter was, right? He was this guy that was like passionate. And yet, it's interesting, in the very next chapter, Jesus predicted this, and Peter denied Jesus 3 times, right? The very next chapter, he's kind of like highs and lows, where he's like, oh man, I'm on fire, and then, you know, he's like, you know, next thing you know, he's like, I don't know, I, in the face of some people asking questions, he's like, I don't know if I believe. So we're going to take a look at how Jesus got Peter back on track. You know, when Peter kind of was like, he denied Christ 3 times, what did Jesus have to do to get him back on track? The context of this passage we're looking at today is Jesus has appeared to Mary, to the disciples a couple of times. And then we get to this passage in John 20, verse 30. And I'm reading that kind of that couple verses before chapter 21, just because when I was in Bible college, these were like highlighted to me as like the purpose of the writing of the book of John. So check this out. John 20, verse 30. You can pull out your Bibles if you haven't already. Or it's behind me. or on your iPhone or iPad. Anyway. Okay. Jesus performed many other signs in the presence of his disciples, which are not recorded in this book. But these are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God, and that by believing, you may have life in his name. By believing in Jesus, you may have life in his name. Of this, like, sometimes I think, oh, we got all the stories, and then I read these, and I'm like, man, there's so many stories that aren't written down. Like, tons and tons of things that Jesus did. And these are the ones that were written just to help us believe. All right, so verse one, I'm just going to kind of tell the story, right? Because lots of you know it, but I'm just going to unpack it as we kind of walk through it. And so just read along with me. Verse 1, it says, afterward, Jesus appeared to the disciples by the Sea of Galilee. It happened this way. Simon Peter, Thomas, also known as Didymus, Nathanael from Cana in Galilee, and the sons of Zebedee, 2 other disciples were together. I'm going fishing, Peter said them. He's like, I'm going fishing. See, Jesus had already appeared to Peter 3 times, and Peter still decides to go back to his trade of being a fisherman. Peter seems to maybe have lost his faith, or maybe like, I'm not sure about Jesus, or maybe Peter was embarrassed, you know? Have his denial of Jesus, unsure of places, or not sure of what to do. Does this sound familiar? You ever do something and you kind of almost feel embarrassed to go back to Jesus? When things fail, like, and we kind of go back to our old routines. Or maybe fishing for him was his comfort, right? It was a place of contemplation. Maybe he just wanted to do something he knew he was good at. Maybe he was ashamed. I'm not sure about you, but I'm not so different from Peter. I easily slip back into old routines, and sometimes I'm like, I'm not worthy. Like, I feel this unworthiness at times. And I know that God forgives me, and I know that he's always there to open up his arms to me. Sometimes I feel that unworthiness of like, hey God, man, I messed up again and I don't know. But this is what he says. He says, I'm going out fishing, Simon Peter told him. And they said, well, we'll go with you. So they went out and got into the boat, but that night they caught nothing. The story continues, and the other disciples are like, obviously Peter's a leader, because, you know, he goes, and everybody's like, yeah, we're coming, man. We're going to hang out with you. Sometimes, have you ever felt like, sometimes when things aren't going well, you just want to complete something? Like, you go outside, and you're like, oh, I'm going to shovel the walk, which we did this week, right? And you're like, you just shovel, and you look outside, and like, it's done, and it starts snowing again. You're like, oh, man, right? Or you go out, and you mow the lawn, because you want to complete something, or, like, you unload the dishwasher. Or you know, when things aren't going well, sometimes you just want to, like, check stuff off the list. I don't know if you're that kind of person. I am. I just want things to happen. I want things to go well. I want to win and to get something right, right? Well, these accomplished fishermen go back to their old trade, and they catch nothing. It's like insult to injury, right? It's like skunked, not a thing. Which reminds you of the words of Jesus. He says, apart from me, you can do nothing. Verse 4, it says, early in the morning, Jesus stood on the shore, but the disciples did not realize that it was Jesus. He called out to them, friends, haven't you any fish? No, they answered. He said, throw your net on the right side of the boat, and you'll find some. When they did, they were unable to haul in the net because of the large number of fish. Talk about a flashback. I don't know if you remember, but in Matthew 4, verse 19, actually last week we were talking about being fishers of men, right? Many of us are, where we're seeking other people to come and to know Christ, to be disciples of Christ. And the same scene, right? They're in a boat and throws to the other side, and it's like, hey, they caught all these fish. It's like, wow, okay. This flashback to the same thing. Calling out to other people and being that kind of person. Then the disciple whom Jesus loved said to Peter, the disciple who Jesus loved, if you are not familiar with that, that's like John's way of saying himself, because he wrote this book, and instead of being like John and like third person, he's like, so essentially saying, John said to Peter, it is the Lord. So Simon Peter heard him say that, and he said, it's the Lord. He wrapped out his other garment, because he had taken it off, because they were fishing, and jumped in the water. The other disciples followed in the boat, towing the net full of fish, for they were not far from shore, about 100 yards off. When they landed, they saw a fire of burning coals, and there were fish on it, some bread. Jesus said to them, bring some of the fish you just caught. It's like there's all sorts of parallels through the Bible. I don't know if you've kind of, I'm picking up on more of them, you know. There's like books written about all the parallels in the Bible, but there's parallels here to like feeding the 5,000. There's parallels to all sorts of scenes through the Bible right in this one scene. The word here for fire actually is a fire of burning coals. And I tried to get like a fire burning coals in here to kind of give you a picture of that. But that's what it was. I thought about it, and then I thought, well, I don't know. People might get a little sketchy, you know, with like fire burning. Anyway, so I didn't. Anyways, have you ever been walking in someplace, though, and you smell something and it reminds you of another place? You know, like maybe like the smell of popcorn, and you're like, the theater, it makes you think of the theater. Or like a perfume, and it makes you think of a specific person. Or maybe overheating brakes, or, oh, fresh buns from the oven, from my grandma's oven. Oh, I love that smell. Anyways, smells have a way of kind of etching into our memories, right? You know, where you smell something, and it's like, oh, it reminds you. Did you know in the whole of the New Testament, this word for fire, like the coal fire, is only found in two places. Two places. Right when Peter was denying Christ in John 18:18, and right here in John 21:9. Those are the only two places that specific word for fire, ember, coal. So I wonder, I think to myself, I'm like, Peter walks up and he smells the fire. He's like, oh, and he's got the flashback in his mind, like, oh, here we go. He's getting flashbacks coming at him, like, all over the place, right? You know, the fish to the other side, he comes and he can smell the fish, and he's like, oh yeah, I remember the last time I smelled that smell. So Jesus is cooking breakfast to disciples, and I wonder if Peter, I wonder how he came up to Jesus, you know? He knows he's got to come and talk to Jesus. Jesus invite him all come up. And yet, as he walks up, is he paralleling? Is he thinking that in his mind? I don't know if he was or not, but it seems to be there's a bunch. And I think as we continue on here, you're going to see if he missed that parallel, Jesus is going to do a couple things to kind of key him into the fact that, oh, I remember, I know what happened. Because Jesus wasn't there when Peter denied him, right? But he's kind of cueing into him. He's like, hey, I know what happened. Jesus predicted what happened. So Simon Peter climbed back into the boat and dragged the net ashore. Not by himself. He did not drag 153. Commentators say he went and helped the other disciples, but just the way that it's written down, that's the way it is. So he climbed back in, helped them pull it back in. 153, but even with so many, the net was not torn. Verse 12 says, Jesus said to them, come and have breakfast. None of the disciples dared ask him, who are you? They knew it was the Lord. Jesus came and took the bread and gave it to them and did the same with the fish. This was now the third time Jesus appeared to disciples after he was raised from the dead. So this is the third time he'd appeared to the disciples, but actually the fourth time that he'd appeared to Peter, because we find in Luke 24, verse 34, that he appeared to Peter another time. So this is the fourth time, right? And still, Peter was in this place where he was like, I don't know. He needed something more. So, one-on-one time with Jesus, two other times Jesus appeared, and this is now the fourth time. This is what we read in verse 15 and 17. I'm going to read this from my Bible because I got notes in here. Anyways, I write notes. I don't know if you guys do this, but some people don't like it. But I write notes all over my Bible, and so I've heard lots of amazing people speak on this passage, and so I just had some things written down that I didn't want to forget. Anyways, when they had finished eating, Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon, son of John, do you truly love me more than these? Yes, Lord, he said, you know. And the word know here is like a fact. You know for a fact that I love you. Jesus said, feed my lambs. Again, Jesus said, Simon, son of John, do you truly love me? He answered, yes, Lord, you know, like a fact, you know that I love you. Jesus said, take care, guard over my sheep. The third time he said to him, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Peter was hurt because he asked Jesus a third time, do you love me? He said, Lord, you know, like knowledge, like experiential knowledge, like together knowledge, all things. You know that I love you. Jesus said, feed my sheep. If you look through there, there's all sorts of really neat things about the word love and different things like that in there. But at the heart of it, Jesus is reinstating Peter. He's saying, I know what happened. I know about what you did. I know the choices that you made. Peter denied Jesus three times, and this is Jesus' way of saying, like, I know you still love me. I'm accepting you, and I want you to go and follow again. I don't want this to pull you back. You need to go follow me again. You need to continue to be my disciple. Jesus was asking for this affirmation of Peter's loyalty, and in that, he reaffirmed Peter's responsibilities. One of the things I appreciate about this passage as I was thinking about it, is Jesus didn't focus on the past. It was pretty clear that he knew what the past was. but Jesus' focus was on the future. His focus was on what was to come. And I think we're pretty good at beating ourselves down about our past. But I think when I talk to God, when I talk to Jesus, I find that, I don't know if you do, but I find that he focuses on my future. He forgets, he leaves the past behind. There's still consequences for our past. But he's so good at focusing on our future. Some of the studies I'm doing, they call it like feed forward. Looking towards the future, looking towards the things that are to be instead of focusing on the things of the past. And man, I love that about Jesus. Which leads me to the question today that I wonder about. That I wonder for each of us, for myself. Do we love Jesus? Have you ever been asked that? Do you truly love Jesus? When we feel beaten, like our efforts have been lost, or we feel disheartened about something, what does it look like for somebody to come and pick you up, right? Jesus came and appeared to Peter four times to get him up on his feet again and going, right? To re-energize him, to get him back on track. He focused on that. He's like, I want you. What has to happen for you to get back up on your feet? To follow again? Maybe you've made a confession of faith and it's like, man, I'm just struggling right now. What would have to happen for you to follow again? To recover from past hurts? To re-engage with Jesus? To reengage with the things that made you passionate when you were first a follower of Christ. You know, to reengage with what it means to be his disciple. Instead of saying things like, oh, I used to do this or I used to do that. Maybe going and doing those things again. Reengaging with God. Are you a follower of Jesus today? Maybe you're here today and you're brought by a friend, or maybe this is your first time and you're far from Christ. You don't really know who Christ is, and you're like, oh, okay, this is interesting. But I just want to say welcome here. I'm glad that you're here today. Maybe you're visiting and you're new to your faith, or maybe you're visiting and this is your first message, and welcome, you know, and you're on this journey, which is fantastic. So I think there's people like that. And I think there's other people. I was actually telling the middle school students this last week. We were just talking about how there was a time in the book of Matthew. It's Jesus called his disciples in Matthew 5. I think it's like Matthew 10 or something like that, where he actually goes and sends them out to share the good news about Jesus. But there's five chapters in there. I don't know how long that was. Maybe it was, I don't know how long it was, but where he hung out with them, where he taught them about him. He made them followers of him. He discipled them and challenged them. And maybe that's you, and you're a new disciple, right? And you're just learning a little bit about this, and you're not in the place yet where you're like, I don't know if I understand this enough to share it. Or you could be in that place and you've been there for too long, where you should actually be, you know, having spiritual meat. You're stuck on milk, you know, and you should be like learning on your own and being discipled on your own and being challenged on your own and getting into the word on your own. Maybe that's where you're at. But then there's others too that are at the place where it's like, oh yeah, I'm a follower of Jesus. I'm a disciple of Jesus. I'm growing in my faith and I'm trying to disciple other people, right? There's some of us like that too. I think it's important to remember that we're all on a journey with Christ. That none of us have arrived, right? We're just in process. All of us. We're all being discipled by Jesus. In other words, Jesus is seeking us to follow him, and we are learning from him. We're supposed to be walking alongside him. That's what this whole series is about, is are you walking alongside Jesus? Are you learning from him? Are you following him? You know, Jesus is seeking us to follow him. Jesus does not want anyone to perish, but wants everyone to come to full repentance in Jesus Christ. John 21 verse 24 says this, "This is the disciple who testifies to these things and who wrote them down, and we know that his testimony is true." So it's my understanding, and I heard this and I researched and I couldn't find where I found this, but that at the time of Christ, there was kind of disciples and then there was rabbis and there were their teachers, and there was people would kind of gather around different rabbis and learn from them. Right? And at some point, if you learn enough and became enough, then you would become your own, you became a teacher as well. Right? Where you would start to teach other people, and people would call you teacher and rabbi and things like that. My understanding is that this passage that John 21:4, John was a little bit older when he wrote this. Right? When Peter wrote this, he was a little bit older. And yet, he still called himself a disciple. When John wrote this book, he was older, and he was like, I'm still a disciple. Many people would probably want to call him teacher or rabbi or those kinds of things, because Peter did some amazing things for the church. And yet, there's a change that happened. There's a switch where it's like, no, we're not teachers and rabbis. We are followers. We're all just followers. None of us have arrived. John, at the end of his life, had not arrived. So again, are you a follower of Jesus? Are you deeply and personally in love with Jesus? Because it starts with us. Are we in love with Jesus? Are we in love with those around us who follow Jesus? Are you in love with those people that are here today? If you call yourself a follower of Christ, then we are to love each other and care for each other like Christ cares for us. You know, one of the ways of evangelism in the Bible that Jesus said in one of his prayers, he said, you know, the way to evangelize is actually by loving each other. And when people see the way that we care for each other, they're going to be like, I want that. I want what you guys have. I want to live that kind of life. That's what I want. Man, That's the kind of evangelism that Jesus talks about. That's one of the ways he's like, hey, you'll know they're Christians by their love, and other people will want that because of the way that they care and love each other. So where are you? Are you not sure about this? Are you a follower who's kind of still learning? Are you helping others follow Jesus? God knows where you are at. God knows when your prayers are empty or when you're trying to sound spiritual in your prayers. He knows better. You can't hide from him. We have this guy, Peter, that I've been talking about. I'm just going to run through a little bit of Peter's life. So Peter became a disciple, became one of the 12. He also became part of this inner core of three. It was predicted that Peter would deny Jesus three times. And he did. Jesus came back and appeared to Peter in Luke 24:34. Jesus appeared to Peter and the other apostles again and again. As we read above, Jesus reinstated Peter and told Peter to follow Jesus. And Peter took that reinstatement very seriously. Peter was like, after that, boom, he was back. He was fired up. And maybe he was all the way along. Maybe he was just kind of going through a tough time or whatever. But he did some amazing things. He became the central leader of the church. He boldly addressed crowds. He healed people in the face of death, in the face of the Sanhedrin. He said, I must obey God rather than men. Right? At the face of being stoned to death, that's what he said. Tradition has it that Peter was most likely crucified for his faith, as Jesus prophesied in John 21, verse 19. Peter took Jesus' reinstatement very seriously. Peter made lots of mistakes, and yet Peter loved Jesus, and he loved the followers of Jesus. At the end of Peter's life, this is what Peter wanted for everyone. 2 Peter 1, verse 15. And I will make every effort to see that after my departure, you will always be able to remember these things. The things that Peter was talking about as the values of being a follower of Christ. Peter wanted them to know what God says and to follow. When we're gone, like if you're a parent here, what do you want? I want my kids to be independently on their own, dependent on God. To have their own personal knowledge of Jesus Christ. To be Jesus followers. How do we look to the past and how have we connected with God to help us do that again? What does it look like that for that in our own lives? Are you willing to connect with God again? To follow again? Maybe during the series that's been your story and you've decided to follow again. You're like, yeah, I'm back on track. I feel like God's been challenging me and I think that's awesome. But I'm not naive to the fact that maybe there are still people that are seeking and not sure about where they're at with God. So what has to happen? What's happened in the past that's got you back on track? What kinds of things have to happen? And I want to ask you that because I want you to be following. I want all of us to be following God. That's the heart of this whole series is to follow me, to follow Jesus, right? I want to close with just two kind of short stories about people following Jesus. There's tons of amazing stories of people in our midst that are doing some really cool stuff. And one just recently happened, and so I wanted to share because some of you maybe know and some of you maybe don't. So there's a group one of the small groups here, they decided to get together and they heard about some things that are going on in the kids ministry and they wanted to support them. So they asked Jen, like, hey, how can we support you? You know, we want to kind of come alongside you and help you. And she said, well, there's one of the rooms, the old library downstairs was fantastic. You know, the look of it was okay for a library. But for grade fours and fives, it's not so good. And so they said, okay, well, we'll paint it up, you know? And so they took up an offering in their small group, you know, and they went and talked to the kids, and the kids gave them the lids of a couple of crayons or like felt pens kind of things. Like, we want these two colors, right, and stuff. And so they got together, and that's what they did. They painted, check this out. This is one of the rooms downstairs. This is where the library used to be. Now it's all like painted green and blue and fun and stuff like that. It's like fantastic. It's like, okay, I'm going to jump in. I'm going to ask God, like, where should we follow? And they were challenged by that. And they're like, hey, here's a need. I'm going to jump in and follow. Right? So there's that side of things where it's like, hey, we're gonna do where God, we're gonna jump in and help where God needs us. The second story is a story that Scott passed on to me this week. And I'm gonna read it kind of in first person because, that's the way that it's written. So Gertrude is this lady that tells the story about this chance encounter. Holding my dinner tray of freshly cooked fast food, I found a seat in the giant window at SeaTac Airport. I had a four-tap table to myself, but figured maybe, unlikely, someone would come by to sit. The open concourse was jam-packed with passengers in between flights. Seats at the giant window were at a premium. I knew as soon as I saw him, be invitational, she thought in her mind. Have a seat. I moved my tray. He reluctantly but gladly sat down. And in my mind and heart was an SOS. Okay, Lord, it's your conversation. The man's name was Rabbit. He had just finished a job interview and was on his way home. I, too, was on my way home from work that Friday evening. He was likely to be offered the job, which would mean another move for his young family. He wondered about his family, his skills, and his decision. He initially appeared so much the opposite, confident, warm, assured. But somehow, with me, the stranger, he was not. I inquired if he had thought about praying about the situation. That led to his basic story of growing up in a Southeast Asian family, being Hindu, yet not firmly so, and some of his basics about his thoughts on God and life. We also talked about his family and his concern for his young wife and child, and his unique job and skills. I shared some about depending on God, giving prayer to Jesus a chance, and just gently poking at his very warm, friendly, and open soul. And that's the end. And I finish with this story because I like it because it calls to follow again. The call to follow again can be very simple. Asking Jesus for help in a conversation. Just nudging someone to pray. Offering a table to sit at. If that's what God's calling you to do, then that's what God's calling you to do. It doesn't have to be something grandiose and big. It doesn't have to be repainting the kids' room. It could be something simple because God calls each of us to follow in different ways. He's gifted us all very uniquely. And he's like, I just want you. I just want you to follow me. I want to engage with you. I'm going to invite the worship team up just as I kind of wrap up here. You know, there's times when we're with a friend, a family member, or a stranger that we simply need ourselves to offer to be like the person with whom we sit. Maybe a listener or a joker sometimes is best, or even a talker, even though that sometimes seems odd. Or maybe allowing ourselves to shed a tear with a person who's hurting. Never faking it. We as followers of Jesus Christ shall be the hands of Jesus, body, mind, and soul. And become like the other, so that we may be an instrument that imparts Christ's salvation. When was the last time you offered your table to someone? Next week, Scott's actually going to be starting a new series entitled Encountering Jesus at the Table. I'll walk through some of the tables we find in the Gospel of Luke. As we respond in singing, I wonder how you in this series, or even today, have been challenged to follow Jesus again. Or can you ask yourself as Jesus' disciples the same thing that Peter was asked? Do you love Jesus? If you do, then can you care for my sheep? Can you care for each other as Peter was commissioned to do? And as we were called to love one another.